Welcome to the deep dive.
Yeah.
You know, there's this idea, one we probably don't even think about much, that all your thinking, it all just happens, up here in your
Well,
head.
right, inside the skull.
Exactly. But what if that's not the whole story? What if your cells, like everywhere, your toes, your immune system, are actually part of what we call thinking?
It's a pretty radical thought, isn't it? Because for centuries, really, science and philosophy have kept the mind and body pretty separate.
Totally separate boxes.
Yeah, mental stuff happens in the brain's wiring, the neurons. The brain's like this amazing computer processing everything. That's been the dominant picture.
And that's exactly the picture we're digging into today. Because for this deep dive, we're exploring this honestly kind of mind-bending claim that thinking cognition, it isn't just locked in the brain. It's more like a huge network. The source calls it a multi-scale web of dynamic information processing spread across your entire body.
And we're drawing this from some really fascinating, quite recent research. It's a 2023 paper, The Brain Is Not Mental, Coupling Neuronal and Immune Cellular Processing in Human Organisms. The authors are Anna Chionica, Evgenia Shmileva, and Michael Levin.
Okay, so Kianika, Shmuleva, and Levin. And their work suggests, well, it could really change how you think about your own body.
It definitely challenges things. So maybe the first place to start is this idea of embodied cognition.
Right, embodied cognition. What does that actually mean?
Well, it's sort of an alternative way of looking at things. It shifts the focus away from just what the neurons are doing.
Okay.
The core idea is that cognition's primary job, fundamentally, is to help living things, biological organisms, adapt to their environment. It's about navigating the world successfully.
So less about solving math problems in your head and more about just surviving and thriving.
In a way, yes. The paper gives a minimal definition of cognition as information processing within a self-organizing system.
Information processing within a self-organizing system. Okay, let's unpack self-organizing. What does that mean here?
It's a concept from physics and biology, really. It's how order patterns just emerge spontaneously in systems. Think of like flocking birds or crystal formation.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
No leader bird, no master crystal plan.
Exactly. It arises from the simple interactions between the parts and their environment. And this is absolutely vital for life.
How so?
Well, biological systems, like our bodies, are constantly working to not fall apart. There's this natural tendency towards disorder, towards entropy.
Many things break down over time.
They do. And living things actively resist that. Schrodinger talked about this life avoids entropy, and there's this thing called the free energy principle, the FEP, which is a more formal way of saying our bodies work hard to stay stable, to stay far from thermodynamic equilibrium.
So it's like we're constantly patching ourselves up, maintaining order against the odds.
Constantly. And we do it through layers of organization. Tiny organelles make up cells, cells make up tissues, tissues make organs. It's this whole
But
hierarchy.
here's where it gets interesting, especially regarding the brain. We tend to put neurons on this special pedestal.
We absolutely do. But the paper makes a really crucial point. Neurons are important, yes, but they're still just one type of
Like
cell.
just a cell. Like a skin cell or a liver cell, fundamentally.
Fundamentally, yes. Cells are the basic units of life. The brain is made of cells. And if an organism needs to respond flexibly to, say, a sudden change in its environment,
Which happens all the time.
all the time, then it needs more than just neural tweaks. The paper says it needs flexible adjustments, not only through neural, but also through metabolic, cellular, and immunological processing at multiple organizational levels.
Yeah. Okay. So it's not just the nervous system dialing things up or down.
Yeah.
It's the whole cellular team pitching in. Metabolism, immune cells, everyone.
It's a whole body response,
Yeah.
a kind of distributed intelligence.
Which leads us nicely to this idea of basal cognition. What's that about?
Basal cognition basically throws a wrench in the old idea that only brains can cognize or learn in any meaningful sense.
Okay, so challenging brain exclusivity.
Exactly. Because research shows that even really simple organisms, things like bacteria, show basic forms of, well, cognition. They can sense their environment, they have a form of memory, they can even learn.
Bacteria can learn. That's surprising.
It is. And what's maybe even more surprising is that the basic molecular tools, the infrastructure for things we usually associate with brains, like memory or decision making, that stuff existed long before neurons even
So
evolved.
the building blocks were already there.
Seems like it. They found genetic similarities for these capacities in plants, even yeast, and they don't have nervous systems at all.
So plants and yeast have some of the same cognitive toolkit genes as we do.
At a basic molecular level, yes. It suggests these abilities were around first, and nervous systems kind of co-opted and elaborated on them later.
Okay, my mind is slightly blown.
Right. And this leads the authors to make a really bold claim. They basically say, all cells are cognitive in the relevant functional sense.
All cells?
In the sense that they process information to help the organism survive and maintain itself. Every cell is playing a part in this larger cognitive web.
So that gut feeling might be less metaphorical than we think. Maybe it's literally cellular communication happening outside the brain.
That's certainly one way to think about it. Yeah, it opens up that possibility. And a fantastic example of this distributed cognition is the immune system.
Right. We usually just think of it as, you know, fighting off colds, defense.
The body's army, yeah.
Yeah.
But it's so much more complex than just defense. Its functions are incredibly broad.
Like what? Beyond fighting germs?
Well, distinguishing self from non-self is huge, obviously. But also missing self, like identifying cells that should be there but aren't signaling correctly. Maybe precursors to cancer.
Yeah.
And aberrant self, damaged cells.
Okay, so it's got sophisticated identification skill.
Very sophisticated. It eliminates pathogens, yes, but also cancer cells, damaged cells. It's crucial for inflammation, for tissue repair, for regulating the whole immune response itself. And get this, it also helps regulate the nervous system, behavior, metabolism, even body temperature. Okay. And it's involved in the fight or flight response.
Wow. It's got its fingers in a lot of pies. A
lot of pies.
Yeah.
And it's not located in one place like the brain. It's a vast network of specialized cells spread throughout the entire body.
And how do they talk to each other, being so spread out?
Through all sorts of ways. Chemical signals called cytokines. Direct cell-to-cell contact, hormones, even signals from neurons. And these immune cells can travel. They migrate through tissues to where they're needed. It's a dynamic, mobile network.
A decentralized intelligence agency, almost.
That's a good way to put it. And if you look closely at what the immune system does, it really mirrors processes we normally label as cognitive. Things like perception, attention, decision-making, communication, problem-solving, even learning and memory.
Learning and memory in the immune system. How does that work?
Well, think about vaccines. Your adaptive immune system learns to recognize a pathogen, so it responds faster and stronger the next time. That's memory.
Ah, right. Of course.
But even the innate system, the sort of first responders, shows memory. They mention NK cell licensing, where natural killer cells get tuned or trained based on past interactions. It's not just the adaptive system that learns.
Okay. And it makes decisions, too.
How? It has to constantly integrate tons of different signals from all over the body, danger signals, signals about the body's own state, and then decide on the right kind of response. Too much response causes damage. Too little lets the threat win. It's performing complex pattern recognition and classification all the time.
That's amazing. It really does sound cognitive when you describe it like that.
Doesn't it? And another fascinating point from the paper is that this whole immune response isn't just the job of specialized immune cells, like T cells or macrophages.
Oh, who else is involved?
Even regular tissue cells, the paper mentions, epithelial cells, like in your skin or gut lining, endothelial cells in blood vessels, fibroblasts in connective tissue, they can detect threats too. They can sense danger and kick off the immune cascade.
So even my skin cells are kind of on patrol.
In a way, yes, they're part of the surveillance system, and you have immune cells that just live permanently in tissues, tissue resident cells, constantly monitoring their local neighborhood.
And if they detect something bad,
they can raise the alarm. And if a threat persists, it can trigger this whole body response called sickness behavior.
Like when you feel lousy, tired, don't want to socialize when you're sick?
Exactly. That feeling. That's your immune system talking to your brain, changing your mood, your motivation, your cognition to make you rest and recover. It shows how deeply integrated everything is.
So it's not just immune cells bumping into neurons. It's a real conversation.
A very real, very complex conversation. The paper stresses that the immune, neural, and endocrine, the hormone system, are essentially a single network for information processing and action.
A single network, not three separate ones talking.
Right. Think about it. Immune cells have receptors for stress hormones. They can even produce neurotransmitters, the brain's chemical messengers. The boundaries are really, really blurry.
Which must mean the brain isn't as isolated as we thought either.
Precisely. That leads to this idea of the brain-immune network ecosystem. The old view was the brain as immune-privileged, sealed off behind the blood-brain barrier, separate from the body's immune chaos.
Yeah, I've heard that, the privileged brain.
But it turns out that's not quite right. even things like repairing damage in the central nervous system or potentially higher brain functions actually rely on immune cells coming in from the rest of the body.
Wait, so immune cells can get into the brain? I thought the barrier stopped them.
Well, it's tightly regulated, but yes, they found specific border structures that allow certain types of immune cells, often reparative ones, to enter the brain environment when needed without causing a massive breach.
Huh, okay. And what about immune cells that are already in the brain?
Ah, yes. Those are mainly the microglia. They're the brain's own resident innate immune cells. Interestingly, they actually come from a different developmental origin than the immune cells in the rest of the body.
So they're specialists for the brain environment.
Exactly. And they do way more than just clean up debris. They're involved in brain development, pruning connections, maintaining health, but also implicated in diseases like Alzheimer's. They're key players in brain function, full stop.
So the brain has its own internal immune system, and it communicates with the body's wider immune system.
Correct. It's a constant dialogue. Yep. Which brings us back to this idea of immune processing as an act of cognition. The paper uses the term immunoknowledge.
Immunoknowledge, I like that.
Yeah. And they use this analogy of crowd wisdom. Think about one single immune cell. It only sees a tiny part of the picture, right? It has a very limited view.
Like one soldier on a huge battlefield.
Exactly. To figure out what's really going on systemically and what the right overall response is, that single cell needs to communicate and coordinate with millions of others. The wisdom emerges from the crowd.
Okay, collective intelligence in the immune system. Makes sense.
But here's the really cool parallel they draw. They suggest that maybe neuronal cells also, taken in isolation, may be equally blind.
So a single neuron doesn't necessarily know what's important either.
Maybe not. It also has a limited view. It needs to interact with thousands of other neurons, sure, but maybe also with non-neuronal cells, like immune cells, like microglia, for collective teamwork and joint fine-tuned responses.
Whoa. So cognition isn't just neuron-to-neuron chat. It's neuron-to-immune chat, too.
That's the implication. Cognition emerges as this crowd wisdom, not just within a network like the neurons talking to each other, but also between networks, between the neural system, the immune system, the endocrine system.
Mind blown again.
Yeah.
It's like layers of conversation happening everywhere.
It really reframes things. It supports the paper's main idea. All cells process information, make decisions in some sense, interact. They're all contributing to keeping the whole organism going.
So that old mind-body split, it just doesn't hold up under this view.
Not really. If you define cognition minimally as information processing for self-maintenance, then yeah, all bodily cells are cognitive in this minimal sense, not just those operating in the brain.
The brain is part of the body's cognitive system, not the sole owner of it.
Exactly. It's maybe a particularly complex and specialized part, but it's embedded within that larger system, which leads the authors to question that typical pyramid structure we imagine with the brain at the top.
Right, the command center view.
Yeah. They suggest maybe thinking more like a tree of cell types, more dynamic, with fuzzier boundaries between what counts as neuronal processing and non-neuronal processing. It's more integrated.
Okay, so let's try and wrap our heads around this. The big takeaway from this deep dive seems to be thinking isn't just brain stuff.
Not solely, no. It's right. This continuum of capabilities spread across different scales involving all our cellular system.
And the immune system is a major, major player in this cognitive landscape, working alongside and interacting deeply with the nervous system.
A central cognizer, you could say. Often overlooked, but absolutely vital. It really forces us to see the brain as part of the body, not separate from it.
Interconnected, interdependent.
Totally. And the paper touches on this idea of a developmental turn in cognitive science. Think about this. Every human brain, every human body starts its development inside another human body.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Inside the mother.
Right. Imagine the constant, intricate cellular communication, the immune interactions, the information exchange happening in that shared environment before we're even born. That co-embodiment shapes us from the absolute beginning.
That adds a whole other layer. So, like a final thought for everyone listening. If we really do think with all the cells of our bodies, if cognition is this distributed, embodied process, what does that change? What new ways might we understand our health or our sense of self or even how we learn and adapt? It feels like it opens up a lot of new questions.